It's Tuesday, January 13th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Welcome to the podcast. We're glad you downloaded us, and we're glad you're part of the growing truth about cannabis. Also, check us out online at the blog at stash.normal.org. We've incorporated a whole bunch of new interactive features, including an online guest book where you can post your thoughts in real time. Well, close to real time. I have to moderate them first. Up on the Stash blog. Also, an expanded comments section with the most recent comments showing up in the right sidebar. Also, you've probably noticed our polls that we've been taking from time to time, and I'll be sure to include some new polls in some upcoming posts. We also want to remind you about Normal's $10,000 pro-cannabis ad campaign contest. The date is this Thursday, the deadline for your entry, so get them in to media@normal.org. For more information, check out the Normal website at norml.org. There is a What Should Obama Do About Pot button over on the top right side. Now, coming up on today's Stash, it's our Government at Work Day, and we're going to be taking a look at the Great Midwest. First, we're going to visit with Ben Mazel, who's working up in Wisconsin, and he's reporting back on a meeting there regarding the introduction of medical marijuana into that state. And then we're going to head over to Michigan, where medical marijuana has been made legal in this last election, and speak with Tim Beck from the Michigan Coalition for Compassionate Care and Michigan Normal. He's got information on the finalization of the medical marijuana rules up there in the state of Michigan. Also, check out our Stash blog at stash.normal.org for the latest post from Normal's deputy director, Paul Armentano, that's been published in the Hill blog up there on Capitol Hill. This is a very influential inside Washington sort of blog that the movers and shakers there all read. And Paul's posts on drug war and marijuana legalization are often the most popular posts on the site. So check that out through the link at our blog, stash.normal.org. Also, you can see a video where Paul's piece figured in a story on the Fox News channel regarding the popularity of the change.gov legalization question. We're also going to reach across cultures in our musical stash today, so brush up a little on your Espanol. Es hora para su normal daily audio stash. Gracias.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. El Paso Council to re-vote on marijuana legalization. Mayor calls out the, quote, potheads who support it. From KVIA.com. El Paso, Texas. City Council is poised to re-vote Tuesday on a drug war resolution that includes the controversial request for an open and honest debate on the prohibition of drugs. Mayor John Cook quickly vetoed the resolution after City Representative Beto O'Rourke added that request at the last minute. Monday, an email from the mayor surfaced, urging those who are against the resolution to make sure they are heard because, quote, the potheads, end quote, have sent their message. It states, quote, I can tell you that all the potheads have sent their emails and they are encouraging the reps to stand by their decision. But why does the silent majority remain silent? We have certainly attracted attention to our city, but I don't think the attention is positive, end quote. Cook told reporters the email was private and not meant to be forwarded to others. Quote, specifically, I was referring to one individual who happened to write an email to me saying that he's been smoking pot for over 20 years and he thinks we should legalize marijuana in the United States. So if calling that person a pothead is insulting to him, then I apologize, end quote. O'Rourke had this to say about Cook's remarks in the email, quote, I'm sure the mayor probably didn't mean for everyone to read this, but I was concerned that anyone who might support having a national open discussion on our best options in the drug war would be described as a pothead, end quote. The vote to override Mayor Cook's veto of the resolution on the drug war in Juarez is scheduled for today. Mayor Cook, did you ever stop to think that the people who want to at least talk about the alternatives to the prohibition of drugs are the majority and they aren't being silent? Or is that too difficult to handle when you haven't even mastered the difference between the plural, as in potheads, and the singular, as in calling that person a pothead? It is insulting, Mayor Cook, to me and to all the people who support the El Paso Council's unanimous vote to begin a new discussion on the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, to call us potheads. Well, I call myself a pothead, but that's because I wear a 100% hemp cap with a pot leaf on it. Literally, there's pot on my head. It's the kind of word that we can use amongst ourselves with good friends. You know, I think like, you know, a word like the N-word, for example. But it's automatically offensive when used by outsiders to describe us. Won't it be something if later today that council overrides his veto? The city that started this stupid war on drugs almost 100 years ago could be the city that begins to end it. Officer fired for leak views wins settlement. From the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. A Montlake Terrace police sergeant who was fired in part for alleged dishonesty has gotten his job back and an $812,500 settlement from his department, Snohomish County, and the city of Linwood. Jonathan Wender's battle to clear his name centered on allegations that police internal investigators and the prosecutor's office targeted him unfairly because of his outspoken views in favor of limited decriminalization of marijuana and reforms in the nation's war on drugs. Wender joined the department out of college in 1990 and while working full-time obtained a Ph.D. in criminology from Simon Fraser University in British Columbia. Though he stated in court he made more drug arrests than other Montlake Terrace patrol sergeants, Wender came to believe the nation was wasting police resources jailing addicts, while failing to curb drug traffickers and to solve the underlying problems leading to drug use, including unstable families. He joined a well-known organization, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, or LEAP, and encouraged exploration of decriminalization of marijuana. He was quoted in a weekly newspaper on his views. He said some fellow officers, including Linwood officers who were part of a drug task force, objected to his views and were targeting him. Though he admitted smoking pot once when he was 15 years old, He said he is not pro-drug. The case against Wender was that he had received a call from a woman complaining that her ex-husband was growing a pot plant. She called in not to have him arrested, but just to get it on the record for future custody disputes. Wender calls the ex-husband and tells him to obey the law or face custody consequences. It turns out this guy had a whole grow operation going on. Internal investigators seized on this and found a way to allege that Wender was lying about how he reported the matter. Wender passed polygraph tests and the evidence against him fell apart. In his chief's opinion, he was wrong to not bust the guy for even one pot plant, but that didn't rise to the level of a termination. But this case illustrates how difficult it will be to even begin the discussion on ending the drug war, as so many people face severe consequences for just talking about it. A neglected revenue source for California, marijuana. Opinion piece from the San Francisco Gate. New sin taxes are likely going to be part of the solution to California's financial woes. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger proposed a nickel-per-drink alcohol tax increase last year. More recently, Assemblyman Tom Torlakson from Antioch introduced legislation to tack on an additional $2.10 in cigarette taxes. Yet marijuana, California's largest cash crop, is completely untaxed. The marijuana crop is valued at $13.8 billion annually, nearly double the value of our vegetable and grape crops combined. Our state is the nation's top marijuana producer. Indeed, the average annual value of our marijuana crop is more than the combined value of wheat and cotton produced in the entire United States. According to government surveys, 14.5 million Americans use marijuana at least monthly, but both the producers and consumers of this crop escape paying any taxes whatsoever on it. While precise figures are impossible given the illicit nature of the market, it is reasonable to suggest that California could easily collect at least $1.5 billion and maybe as much as $4 billion annually in additional tax revenue if we took marijuana out of the criminal underground and taxed and regulated it, similar to how we handle beer, wine, and tobacco. I always wonder if the figures on taxing marijuana are based on its current black market value. Marijuana costs $400 an ounce, multiplied by how many tons people consume in a year, multiplied by some decimal tax figure, and voila, you get $4 billion. But if marijuana were legal, wouldn't you be able to grow it in big open fields and employ modern farming and harvest techniques and technology? Would legal weed really cost $400 an ounce, or would it be priced more like alfalfa? Or, since people are accustomed to paying $400 an ounce, would the price remain about the same?
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Just because we can't win the war on car thieves, that doesn't mean we legalize car theft. I'm reading the K. Fox El Paso story about the great drug legalization conversation veto override, and I noticed they have a poll there on legalization. So first, I want to encourage you all to go to the KFOX link. It's up on our blog at stash.normal.org and vote. At the time of this recording, we're only about 600 votes in, and yes is leading by 49%. Then I get to reading the comments on the story when I pick out this fairly typical one from a guy named Sam.
It is true that the illegality of drugs is the cause of the crime surrounding their distribution. Likewise, it is the illegality of stealing cars that creates car thieves. In fact, the cause of all criminality is law. As far as I know, no one has ever suggested that law should therefore be abandoned. The inability of winning the war against theft, burglary, robbery, and fraud has never been used as an argument to legalize these crimes. The present situation is bad, but it could be made worse by a wrong policy decision. the extreme proposal to legalize the distribution and consumption of drugs as the answer to so many problems, crime, overcrowding in the prisons, etc., should be evaluated carefully. Equating this issue with alcohol prohibition, as is often done by pro-drug legalization groups, is false and inaccurate. It is one thing to attempt to ban alcohol, which is used by at least 90% of the adult population, and another to ban substances that are still not in customary use, in an attempt to ensure that they never do become customary. Once the stigma of illicit drugs is removed, society will be on a very slippery slope. Surely we have already slid down enough without looking for more slopes to slide down.
Hey, Sam, thanks for the laugh. I always chuckle at the, well, if we legalized rape, there'd be no more rapists argument. And the, well, if we legalize, we'll be overrun by addicts. These slippery slopes that prohibitionists present whenever a common sense move to legalize cannabis is suggested. Why are theft, burglary, robbery, rape, murder, and fraud crime? Because someone is harmed. Cannabis use isn't a crime in the true sense. It is a violation of the law, a stupid law. If suddenly there were no laws and no cops, and one human being killed another human being, the rest of the humans gathered could easily agree that a crime was committed and would probably organize to punish the murderer. If there were no laws suddenly and no cops, Sam, explain to me why you'd organize the other humans to punish me for smoking the flower off a cannabis plant. Because you think I should take hard liquid drugs, alcohol, instead of inhaling the vapor of mild herbs? Because you don't like the way it makes my eyes red? Because you hate jam bands? Because you're trying to short sell stock in Doritos? Look, show me the harm, and I'll show you the crime. Otherwise, you're just being a busybody. Will you smoke pot once it's legal, Sam? Well, if you're not going to, who is it that doesn't smoke pot now who will start smoking then? Everyone who wants to smoke pot already does. In fact, when it is legal, fewer people smoke it. The Netherlands, and I'm sure you're rolling your eyes, has half the marijuana usage as America, even though they haven't the stigma of illicit drugs, and they have a customary use of cannabis in coffee shops. Dr. Mitch Earlywine at SUNY Albany has shown that every state that passed legalization of medical marijuana saw a decline in the rates of teenage marijuana use. Now, a comparison to alcohol prohibition is not accurate, but not for the reasons you think of. First off, 90% of the population do not and did not use alcohol. Modern government surveys put the number of at about 50 to 55% of Americans 12 and older who take liquid drugs monthly. Fully 50%, or 100 million Americans, have tried cannabis, and 14 million of us used cannabis this month. The number of people who smoke pot at least once a year today is half the number of total drinkers there were in the U.S. back in Prohibition. Secondly, during Prohibition of alcohol, your doctor in any state could write you a prescription for alcohol use. You could get an exemption for religious use. Nobody was really arrested or jailed for their personal home use. Prohibition mostly fought the traffickers and producers. Even speakeasies were tolerated, kind of like the coffee shops in Amsterdam. If you were caught with booze, they took it, smashed it, and sent you on your way. Winemakers lobbied for and received from Congress permission to sell grape juice in huge barrels with warning labels on it that said, "Warning, do not let this grape juice sit unrefrigerated for 12 days, as this would result in the fermentation of the juice to 30-proof alcohol, illegal under federal law." So, you're right. Equating paramilitary no-knock midnight SWAT raids, helicopter task forces, civil asset forfeiture of one's belongings, denying of employment, housing, welfare, health care, insurance, professional licensing, child custody, student loans, and possibly one's liberty for sowing a hemp seed to alcohol prohibition is false and inaccurate. I'd kill for marijuana prohibition to be like alcohol prohibition. It is far too late to think we can keep cannabis use from becoming customary. The 1960s called and wants to say hi. Have you watched television or movies or listened to popular music lately? There is a reason the Mexican drug cartels are so rich they can buy off the government. People here like their marijuana. The very existence of this problem proves that cannabis use has become customary.
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
Well, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15th, 2009. Check NORML.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more. Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states, and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws.
Body dies, the ego cries, the first day.
If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
The afternoon pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny?
Well, with the beginning of the new year, it's time for us to get back to our government at work and take a look at the state legislatures around the country that are looking at making changes to their cannabis laws. Joining us today from the great state of Wisconsin is one of the vice presidents of Wisconsin Normal, Ben Mazel, who's also going to be a Senate candidate in 2012. And good luck to you on that, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Russ.
So the Wisconsin legislature has just gone into session, and they apparently have a few different topics here that would be of interest to our listeners here at the Daily Audio Stash regarding hemp and medical marijuana. Let's take a look at the hemp first. What are the Wisconsin legislatures going to do about hemp this year?
Well, we're kind of in a special case in that it's always been legal to grow hemp in Wisconsin. We're the only state to continue it after 1950, all the way up to 57. So our law still has a provision that allows licenses to be issued to hemp farmers for $100 fee. So we had a bill in the last session of the legislature which would have created a commission to study the ways that Wisconsin could get in on a restored hemp industry. It passed the Rural Economic Development Committee unanimously, but the Republican speaker wouldn't give it a floor vote. And, as been a change now in that the Democrats took control of the assembly, joining the Senate and the governor.
Excellent. So are the Democrats in Wisconsin more amenable to these measures with regards to hemp? And
well, the hemp bill, we had strong bipartisan support. We actually had a unanimous committee vote last year.
Oh, good, good.
But that didn't cover over to the speaker.
Now, is Wisconsin's hemp law kind of in that same situation as other states where it requires the licensure from the DEA? Is that what's holding it up?
Well, it's not so much that the law says, that the state law says so. It's that you can have a state license and then you'd still get busted by the feds.
Right, okay.
That's the way the Oglalas, who had tribal licenses, were busted by the feds.
Right, exactly. Now, on the medical marijuana front, we had the state of Michigan just pass medical marijuana this year by citizen initiative, and it passed overwhelmingly in every single county, even passed medical marijuana in Michigan. Does this bode well for Wisconsin and other medical marijuana states for the upcoming session?
Well, we don't have an initiative process here, so we've been forced to try and change the legislature's mind. And there, too, we ran into the problem of the last couple assembly speakers wouldn't let things go anywhere.
Mm.
Last year, they sent it to the committee, which he'd appointed a chair who was, I guess, the most staunch opponent of medical marijuana. And she said, I won't give this a hearing. It's not, you know, it's as long as I'm chair of that committee, it's going nowhere.
Right.
She's no longer chair of the committee.
Yay. So we've got some new chair and some new people in charge there in Wisconsin. So you all feel like this is going to get a better shot this time?
Well, I don't think we're going to pass it quite as quickly as the hemp bill, but hanging out, I went to the swearing-in ceremonies and the receptions that they had in their offices beforehand Monday. I guess my email about that's what got your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm told that we will get the bill passed this year.
Excellent.
The speaker, again, is committed to giving it a vote, but unlike the Rural Economic Development Committee, which doesn't have anything else on its plate, the Health Committee's got a pretty full agenda.
I see.
So we're kind of up to not so much whether we will get a medical marijuana bill as what medical marijuana bill.
Gotcha. Now, another thing that I've been tracking throughout all the different states lately is how in this economic crisis, many of these states are facing severe cutbacks to their budgets. We saw New York, California, Pennsylvania, some of these states that are severely cutting back things like aid to dependent children, cutting back on education and so on. Does Wisconsin face this same sort of pressure, and is there any movement now to show how the taxation and regulation of cannabis could possibly alleviate some of these problems?
I don't think there's been discussion about the taxation side, because that runs into federal problems. Where I do see some big changes in the way the state manages its prison system. It's pretty clear that there isn't going to be an increase in the corrections department budget, and that even if you hold the number of prisoners steady, you can't do that without reducing the number of prisoners, because costs continue to go up.
Sure.
So the gossip has the discussion on the budget, including some form of relief from the truth in sentencing laws that were passed in the 90s. So this won't affect directly what happens with people with new cannabis arrests, but it will lead to early releases from the prison system under some as yet to be worked out mechanism. And when you're looking at who you're going to release early without it coming back to bite you when they reoffend, and that generally is going to mean both the oldest prisoners and the people who had the least scary convictions in the first place, which would be not so much marijuana possessions, which we don't really have people doing time for, but largely growers.
Sure.
And people who are in non-sales.
Right. So the people of Wisconsin, faced with the overburdened prison population, just might let out a few gardeners. That would be probably a good move.
I'm suspecting it would be more than a few.
Yeah, that would be great. This is really exciting to see these things taking place, especially in the Midwest here, where, you know, when we look at the studies that show people's acceptance of cannabis, of course, the West Coast and the East Coast are much more accepting, and the Midwest tends to be the least accepting. Do you feel just...
I don't know that that's really ever been the case.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
The first state to do a decriminalized possession.
True.
In the 70s. And our neighbors in Minnesota have had a decrim $100, basically the equivalent of what Massachusetts just passed for a long time.
Right.
Wisconsin went with a kind of funny hybrid instead.
Mm-hmm.
We passed a municipal ballot initiative in 1976. creating a $5 civil possession. And the legislature responded to that by making that legal, essentially said that, well, we'll let cities and villages create a non-criminal option, and then it would be up to the district attorney whether to pursue the matter under the municipal ordinance, which being civil didn't kick in, or now doesn't kick in. It wasn't yet there. Things like smoke a joint, lose your license, and the student loan provisions.
Sure. Well, like I say,
all the college towns adopted those ordinances in the 70s, and actually most of the state just did so, but the places that hadn't had it just did so in the last few years. There's a lot of variation in how much of a civil fine is in effect.
Well, it's all really good news. Glad to hear that, and maybe that'll turn the Midwest into to the new source for marijuana law reform. That'd be great to see some good changes come about through Wisconsin's legislature. Ben Mazel is a vice president of Wisconsin Normal and an upcoming Democratic 2012 Senate candidate, I understand.
I also ran for the Senate a couple years ago in 2006, the same seat, against Herb Cole in the primary.
Excellent.
And I'm thinking a lot of the progress we're seeing with the Democratic caucus now kind of flows indirectly from that. Certainly your rural state assembly rep who saw me pull 2,000 votes in their district as well. Gee, Ben, could you help me get some of those voters out for my race?
Well, we certainly hope it turns out well for you. We need more supporters in our United States Senate, that's for sure. Ben, thanks a lot for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Well, thank you.
¿Es usted o alguien que usted conoce un fumador de marihuana? ¿Ha usted o alguien en su familia sido detenido por una violación de las leyes de marihuana? Entonces, usted necesita saber la verdad sobre la marihuana. La Organización Nacional para la Reforma de las Leyes de Marihuana, conocida como NORML, es una fuente importante de información verdadera sobre la marihuana. También es una fuente de contactarse con un abogado especializado en esos asuntos. Para más información, busque en www.norml.org o llame al 1-888-867-NORML.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Don't let anyone tell you we don't appreciate diversity and variety in our daily audio stash. One of my favorite subgenres of music is recordings from the early 20th century about marijuana with the H. The Tall Brothers pay tribute to what they call reefer jazz of greats like Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway. One of the greats whose name doesn't get the recognition it deserves is Lelo Guerrero. This song, Marijuana Boogie, popped up in my music search and I found his biography fascinating, as told by his son Mark. Lelo Guerrero is rightfully recognized as the father of Chicano music, because no other Chicano artist has come close to the writing and recording of more great songs in virtually every genre of Latin music, including salsa, norteña, banda, rancheras, boleros, corridos, cumbias, mambos, cha-chas, socially relevant songs, swing, rock and roll, and blues. He has also created children's music, comedy songs, and parodies, in addition to being a world-class singer. All of the above offers just a glimpse of over 700 songs he's recorded since his first record in 1939 with Los Carlistas on Vocalion Records. Lelo Guerrero has performed all over the United States, Mexico, and in Paris, France. He has received countless awards, including being declared a national folk treasure by the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., a National Endowments of the Arts Fellowship, a Nostros Lifetime Achievement Award, and the National Medal of Arts, presented by President Clinton. He has been invited to the White House 3 times by Carter, Bush the First, and Clinton. This is some great Latin-flavored marijuana boogie, literally, from Lelo Guerrero. This is Marijuana Boogie.
Se alerta ese vato, no se vaya al rol, porque va a empezar al rato el piano del cantón. Porque va a empezar al rato el marihuana boogie boy. No se agüite ese pues, pégale duro esas teclas. Vamos a tronarnos las manos, digo yo. Le voy a sacar una buena vena para echar un buen borlo ese. Con esta bota de aquella este buggy.
Mi jaina se llama Juana, 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 Juana. Pero ya todos los vatos le dicen marihuana. Mari, marihuana, como te quiero yo. Le suena ese boogie, me siento volador. Pégale bute esas teclas, ya estoy aviador. Pégale bute esas teclas, que ya estoy volador.
St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
It's Seems like we're looking a lot at the great Midwest now for some of our government at work stories, and we're going to go right to Detroit, Michigan, where the state of Michigan has become the 13th state to allow the medical use of marijuana. But just passing that law isn't the end of it. There's still all sorts of administrative rules that need to be set up to organize the program. Joining us here from the Detroit Coalition for Compassionate Care, the chairman of that organization, also involved with Michigan Normal, is Tim Beck. And Tim, welcome back to the stash.
Well, I'm glad to be back, Russ. Thank you very much.
Well, let's give our listeners kind of a thumbnail sketch here of what happened last week with this meeting to set the rules for medical marijuana in Michigan.
Well, what happened, there was a massive turnout by, you know, administrative hearing standards. I mean, there were over 100 activists that came in all across the state. Some of them regular folks, others very, very sharp, you know, articulate, you know, kind of people, you know, attorneys. The Representative Karen O'Keefe from the Marijuana Policy Project was there. She's an attorney, and I have to say MPP. I mean, they may need some in-service training as far as working with local activists, but nonetheless, they are very, very good at the law. They're extraordinarily good, and they were quite powerful. We've got other organizations that are springing up in Michigan. We had a lawyer from Ann Arbor, Dennis Hayes, you know, his name is, and we did very, very well. In fact, there was really no opposition of any kind that even showed up. I was stunned at that. There were threats from the Michigan State Medical Society that they were going to shut it down. There were all kinds of pronouncements from law enforcement and drug treatment, you know, advocates and everything else. But in the end game, even the state police, it was really funny. The spokesman, you know, showed up and said he didn't even like some of the rules, and that is, they didn't, one of the rules is kind of silly, but any excess marijuana, these administrative rules would require to be turned over to the state police.
Yeah.
And state police said, look, we don't want this excess marijuana. You know, and they had a couple other suggestions that were not hostile, you know, at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the state police, they simply wanted a thing where the law enforcement officer could use the lien law enforcement information network to just access it right in the police, you know, the computer in the police car to have it tied in to the Department of Community Health, which we didn't have any real objection, you know, to something like that. And the other thing, they didn't want anybody to be able to, as far as cash compensation for a caregiver. They said that fine, they didn't have a problem with compensation, but they didn't want to have people being paid in marijuana.
Gotcha.
but they were very, you know, like I say, very, you know, quite reasonable, and
Did this meeting go to setting any limits or regulations as far as how people are going to acquire marijuana, how they have to sign up, what they're allowed to possess, and so
well,
on?
Well, there was a lot of, no, they did not. See, the law is very specific here in Michigan, and very, very tightly written. And so they didn't really mess with anything like that. What they did is try to put on to make the process as onerous as possible. One of the things that's highly objectionable, and it is not provided in the law, they wanted the ability to investigate any doctors that are, you know, writing too many recommendations, whatever that would mean. And they could also want to go after patients, you know, if they're, you know, to evaluate their own health or medical records if they're going to one of these doctors. They wanted to have face-to-face meetings if they're suspicious of somebody, which could mean hundreds of miles in travel with, you know, the size of the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
They wanted patients to submit the name of their all the other patients that their caregiver is providing for. They wanted to list the name of the caregiver and the address on the ID card. Lose your wallet, and that caregiver, you know, might be the victim of a crime. You know, let's put it that way.
Sure.
They wanted to have inspections of grow sites. They wanted to have complex inventory management procedures. I mean, stuff that way, way is outside. I mean, in essence, they're trying to turn themselves into an arm of law enforcement, which is clearly against the rules.
Well, yeah, and it seems to me like they were trying to set rules for medical marijuana that would be onerous rules for any other legal prescription drug. I mean, we don't require people to keep inventories of their Percocet, for example.
Right, exactly. Well, another thing that was really laughable is that even the usable marijuana had to be kept in a safe. You know, I mean, people don't have to keep Oxycontin and Percocet in a safe now.
Yeah. You know? I think I'd written about that and said something to the effect of how strange it would be for someone to be busted for not keeping the marijuana in the safe, but they've got Bacardi 151 in the liquor cabinet, cigarettes on the table, you know, Drano underneath the kitchen counter. Come on.
And then they wanted caregivers to submit an entire criminal history, you know, and so forth of every, you know, misdemeanor, everything that they've ever done in their whole life. I mean, the law is very specific. The only individuals that cannot be a caregiver is anyone with a felony drug conviction. But beyond that, they wanted all this detailed background information on people. And but, you know, again, there's two schools of thought of what's going on. Some people feel it's just a sinister kind of directive that's coming down from the governor and from the attorney general and the head of the department, a woman named Janet Osluski, who was head of the Department of Community Health, but she was a big, big shot in the drug treatment community. And they felt, some people feel, that the committee hearing officers were simply being manipulated and that these rules were the product of the governor and the attorney general and everything else. Other people feel that they were just bureaucrats trying to do their job. They cited Oregon, for instance, as a major source of where they got their information. And what's actually, and I tend to believe that in the cliche that never attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetence and ignorance.
Yeah.
And I think there's some incompetence and ignorance going on, because what was really laughable, in their own proposed rules, it allowed a patient to grow, you know, up to 12 plants for themselves, and then to also have a caregiver which can grow another 12 plants for them.
Oh.
Which is obvious they didn't understand the law.
Yeah.
And in fact, the state police caught that. You know,
oh, wow.
So we didn't tell them about it. But the state police caught that and said, hey, wait a minute. You know, if you're going to have a caregiver, you can't grow 12 plants yourself.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, how the law was written. So that's what kind of leads me, a mistake like that kind of leads me to believe that they were just kind of floundering around.
Yeah.
At this point. Time will tell.
Yeah.
The other beautiful thing, by the way, we're not exactly shaking in our boots in terms of if whether or not the department completes its rulemaking process in time, or even if they dig in their heels and decide to say, screw you, sue us, because we've already in the legislation written the rules in case they do that. And in that case, all you got to do is have a doctor's note, and if you want to be a caregiver, send a certified letter to the Department of Community Health telling them I'm going to be a caregiver, and that's it.
Hmm.
That's the law.
That's
if they don't want to fight, if they don't want to create the rules, then those are the rules.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. So we really don't care whether it's in litigation for 2 years or what.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about having, you know, 12 other states going before you, is we've worked out some of the kinks to some of this legislation, and we understand what these legislators are going to try to do to throw roadblocks in front of it. So, yeah, the Michigan law is extremely well crafted in that respect.
Yeah.
And the other thing you had mentioned about don't pin on malice what could be pinned on incompetence. And I want to reiterate that to some of our listeners here, because here, you know, when we're fighting the drug war, we've been oppressed for so long that we do tend to attribute malice to some of these people's actions. But try to put yourself in the chair of the average, you know, let's say 50-something government bureaucrat who's never touched weed in their life, and hearing all their life, it's bad, it's dangerous, it's deadly, it's a deadly, dangerous drug. And then one day, suddenly, oh, you're going to give this to people and let them have it. It is quite a mindset to have to try to change, and we should have a little more, you know, we're not going to cut them any slack, but we should at least, you know, have some compassion for what they're going through.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would agree.
Yeah.
And if you saw these people, believe me, I don't think they any a bit of herb ever touched their lips.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Absolutely. Well, Tim Beck is the chairman of the Detroit Coalition for Compassionate Care in Detroit, Michigan, and also involved with Michigan Normal. Their website is minorml.org. Before we go, Tim, any final thoughts about the Michigan Medical Marijuana Program?
Well, we're very excited about it. I think next to California, I mean, we wish we had a California law, of course, but in my opinion, I would say Michigan is really about, we got about the best law in the country. And partly because we went through a ballot initiative and partly because this road has been tread, you know, many times. And, you know, Oregon's got a good law with all due respect, but I think ours is even better.
Excellent.
Of course, you know, is that you don't, it's not limited to some nonprofit thing where you can only charge for your, you know, your light bill and so
right.
I mean, you can, yeah. So we anticipate having an adequate supply of caregivers.
That'll be excellent.
But we're very, very excited about it. We're just delighted with the way this has turned out.
Well, we're all excited for you too, and we're looking forward to seeing other states in the Midwest like Minnesota and Wisconsin and Illinois, which are all looking at medical marijuana legislation this year. We hope they take the cue from Michigan and understand that there's nothing to fear. The people support this. I mean, Michigan passed this law in every single county, even the ones that voted for John McCain. So it's not a third rail issue anymore.
No.
All right. Thanks, Tim, for joining us here on The Stash, and we'll be back in touch with you to keep up on what's happening in Michigan.
Thank you very much, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder that as this new legislature gets started up, either in your state or the Congress for that matter, at the federal level, it's time for you to start making some phone calls, writing some letters, and sending some faxes. Put the joint down, step away from the bong, as my friend Madeline Martinez is fond of saying, and get active, get involved. It's not a matter of when they legalize marijuana, it's a matter of when you legalize marijuana. Check out NORML.org online. We've got all the resources you need to get in contact with your elected officials. Be persistent. It's going to take some time to get the change we can all believe in. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.